Action e-alert newsletter. Regardless of what country you live in, you're faced with globalist agendas that are designed to corral you, to control you, and eventually to kill you. And those agendas have to be pushed back. So, without further ado, before we bring our very exciting guest, whom I describe as a firebrand attorney, and God knows the world needs more firebrand attorneys. If we could clone them, we'd all be much better off. Before I do that, I want to introduce you to my co-host and co-trustee, as I started to say, Ralph Fusitola, JD, another firebrand freedom attorney. And Ralph generally tells us at this point in the show exactly what's happening in the health freedom world. Hello, Ralph.
Hello, Dr. Rima. And indeed, there are just two important stories right now. And one of them is what Counsel Little is going to be talking about. And by the way, looking on the internet about him, I found out that he's not only a lawyer, but it looks like he's involved in growing organic and natural foods. So it might be very interesting to get into that discussion, too. That's one thing. The legal action that Graham is part of in Australia, and the other is the information we've been getting on the internet from people we know in California regarding the prospects for fighting and stopping Governor Jerry Brownshirt's invidious discrimination against people who have conscientious objections to putting toxins in their bodies, or as the Supreme Court put it, a privacy interest in preventing government agents from piercing the skin. I think from a legal standpoint, there are a lot of interesting developments going on, and I believe that with the proper presentation to the proper courts, we may be able to preserve our very precious right of informed consent, a right that literally our parents, your parents, my parents, fought for in World War II. As I've said before, wars have consequences. And one of the consequences of World War II was the enshrining of informed consent in the customary international law, binding on all nations in all circumstances. So the actions of the Australian government with the no pay, no jab, no pay rule, and the actions of the California government, where Governor Jerry Brownshirt says, oh, you children all have a constitutional right to a free public education, but you got to surrender your right to informed consent before you can get that benefit. That is called an unconstitutional condition, and more colloquially, it's known as Sophie's Choice, after the World War II movie, which is such a horrid choice, was forced on a woman. And that is exactly the nature of the people we're dealing with. When Dr. Rima talks about them and we talk about what they're doing, remember, these are people who have absolutely no moral sense whatsoever. These are people who, like Dr. Offit the Prophet, says, oh, little kids could have 10,000 vaccines at one time. No danger. That's who they are. Dr. Rima.
Well, before we introduce you to Graham Little, and I cannot tell you how excited I am to speak to this Australian attorney and find out how the fight is going against no jab, no pay, and I'm going to turn the sound on my phone way down. I forgot that. Sorry about that. I want to remind you that if you live in one of the 126 countries that have signed and ratified the Geneva Convention, which is pretty much everybody who's listening, then you have the inalienable right, legally protected by international law and by your country, to informed consent. You have the right to say no to any medical procedure for good reason, for poor reason, for no reason. And you must be told all of the dangers that are inherent in or possible in that treatment before you are asked to say yes or no to it. And of course, you're not given that information. But in order to assert that right, you have to assert it correctly. And therefore, I urge you to write down the link that Ralph is putting on our live stream, but I'll say it for the people who will be listening to the podcast. Please go to tinyurl.com/AVD card. AVD as in Advanced Vaccine Directive Card. Because with this proper assertion, in any one of these 126 countries, including Australia, the United States, Canada, wherever the mandates are being brought forward, you can say no with legal power to do so. Now, that's pretty exciting. The tinyurl.com/AVD card. And there is a good deal of information there, including complete instructions on how to use this for yourself and your children. And now, without further ado, I would like to introduce to you and to meet for myself and for Ralph for the first time, Graham Little from Australia. Hello, Graham. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Dr. Reema. I don't know whether you can see me at the moment, but
not yet.
And also Ralph.
No, we cannot see you at the moment. But would you be kind enough, even though all we can see is a generic little white man on a pale blue screen, and I know you're not pale blue or pale anything.
I'm working on that. I got a photo of
you. I've
got a photo of Graham. Oh, there he is. Okay, good.
Wonderful. You will be able to see Graham in just a moment. Would you please be kind enough to introduce yourself in all your firebrand glory to our listeners?
Well, it's a big introduction. I'm not sure I can justify that at this stage, but I suppose my fire branding started back in 1981 when, as a 26-year-old lawyer, I joined the newly formed equivalent of your SEC, and it was the National Companies and Securities Commission with brand new legislation to clean up the big corporates and the way they took over all the other companies. So disillusioned after 2 years as ending up as principal legal officer, with the last case, incidentally, I took on was a case against Rupert Murdoch, who'd warehoused some stock in a famous takeover battle with the former tycoon Robert Holmes, the court, and he was trying to take over TNT, one of our main transport companies. And naturally, like all good regulators around the world, my bosses, the National Companies and Securities Commission, said, well, why do you want to take on Rupert Murdoch? Like, that's a bit silly, isn't it? So 48 arch lever binders later, finally they agreed to take him on. And then I found out at a very young age the power of Rupert's solicitors, and they threw every trick in the book, you know, to stop this case being heard, a bit like your the MMR case with those whistleblowers where Merck's right. Got that nicely stalled. So in the end, I left a bit disillusioned, and I was actually warned, actually, by the CEO of that regulatory body, Graham, keep your mouth shut on another case, which turned out to be the biggest diamond find ever in the world. That was covered up in Australia, the diamond find. And I was taken off the case during my honeymoon, and ultimately paid the price when I later became a venture capitalist. And unfortunately, my old boss, who'd moved on from the National Companies and Securities Commission, he became the head of the stock exchange. So then I learned about how stock exchanges regulate corporate behaviour. And when I listed with a mate, four listed public companies through the 90s, all focused on, or three focused on government programs to help small, medium-sized companies fund their new entrepreneurial pursuits. Oh. Guess who tried to stop all four prospectus issues succeeding? My old boss at the National Companies and Securities Commission. It's 40 years ago, nearly, is it? 30? Ray Scharrer, if you're still alive, I haven't forgotten, but I am down by the...
Well, you must be a tenacious person, Graham, because I've just pulled up a webpage that announces that you're growing 2,500 comfrey plants on French Island. Is this true?
Uh-huh. Yes, that's been true. I've had a massive faith in comfrey. I think it was an organic gardener told me about it at my previous... I had a stud farm on the Mornington Peninsula when I had a bit of money. I haven't got any money at the moment, but I was told by him I had this plant growing, and it's a fantastic plant to make fertiliser from. So really? This is about 10 years ago. So he showed me how to do it, and cut a long story short, I learned about, 3,000 years of history with comfrey, which, can be used for arthritis, healing wounds, bones, right. You name it. Started using it myself, and then I set up a little business, still very little, growing comfrey, and eventually I want to attack that particular area of science because in Australia we decided to call comfrey a poison,
right?
Even though it's never been in one, never been so one adverse event ever lodged in the
you,
US.
It's a photo of you in a field of poison. That's what we're looking at now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so that's my long-term goal. But let's just get a bit of damage happening with Big Pharma first, and then we'll try and attack that. I've been told by the Minister for Health that comfrey has no relevance for health of the human body. That's despite having 124 PubMed articles and a Cochrane collaboration review for arthritis. So that's how bad we are regulating in Australia.
Sounds like CBD, doesn't it? Or silver.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And guess what? The number two herb that I want to grow has been called in Australia. I don't know whether it is in the US. It's a noxious weed, and that's naturally St. John's wort.
Oh, yeah.
Noxious weed.
Unbelievable. 2,400 PubMed articles in a brilliant Cochrane collaboration review. So we're not allowed to grow that either because it's a noxious weed.
You're taking on anti-inflammatories, and you're taking on antidepressants.
Yeah.
Yes.
Small markets. Small markets.
I love it.
It's $35 billion just the arthritis market alone. I've checked out, but I use it personally. I do track cycling. I never did any cycling before, but I've just taken up master's track cycling, and I haven't missed any training in 18 months. I just pour the comfrey all over my body after I finish training, and I have no soreness, nothing. So it's a freak medicinal herb, which is why Big Pharma have done everything to shut it down.
Right. Well, we know that story. So tell us, I very much want to talk about the Big Pharma aspect in the launch, but tell us to begin, if you will, please, about the no jab, no pay law, because there will be some people who haven't heard of it, despite our trying to tell everybody, and I'm sure you have too. And tell us about the legal status of the challenge to this insane and obscene overreach by the government of Australia.
Yes, well, coincidentally, it was introduced by the Liberal Party, who champion the free enterprise system. So I've checked out their homepage, and it defies logic how the Liberal Party could introduce such a mandated requirement for mothers to vaccinate their children, otherwise they'll lose their social welfare. So essentially they've brought it in on 1 January. I'm actually relatively new to the vaccination debate. I really started in this agenda 5 years ago in relation to a what I'd say is a criminal conspiracy to create a test case for natural medicine and their lack of scientific evidence. So I've really come in on the back of that. And then I've been introduced to the vaccine. Sorry?
Can you tell us about that? That's fascinating.
I know a lot about that. And that's why I think I've got an edge that I can add to the vaccination debate, particularly in Australia, but potentially in other countries, because of my experience in that long, it was the longest health practitioner case ever in Victoria, possibly Australia. Went 66 days on the issue of informed consent, which you've put front and central. And of course, that's the issue that's front and central in vaccination. So, perhaps we could start there, because this is how I'm attacking and counselling those in the vaccination arena, both sides of the fence, whether you're a vaccinator or an anti-vaccinator or an anti-over-vaccinator or whatever you are, I've been counselling all sides of the equation on what happened in this test case, which was designed to destroy the ability of a brilliant hyperbaric oxygen therapist who, working in conjunction with some of your leading US hyperbaric professionals in the area of neurological hyperbaric, he was taken on the issue primarily of informed consent in relation to 71 medical conditions and the level of scientific evidence supporting those. And, of course, it backfired on our government body, which has been recently set up looking for its first big scalp. That's a body called AHPRA, A-H-P-R-A, Australian Health Practitioner Regulation Agency. And they waged this battle hoping to get a major case to then prove legally that no natural medicine practitioner has sufficient science to be able to claim anything, really, with any patient.
So let me get this right. What they're doing is they take the model of the medical license, which, as we know from cases reaching back to the beginning of the 20th century, was a model about protecting the public from doctors, from physicians and surgeons, because what physicians and surgeons do, except for Dr. Rima, of course, who doesn't do these things, is use dangerous modalities that that have really significant risks of adverse events. And so the public has to be protected from these medical practitioners. And they're taking that model and they're applying it to things like massage therapists and acupuncturists and nutritionists who are not using dangerous modalities
at all. Which is precisely what happened at the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th century when John D. Rockefeller Jr. decided that he had to create a marketing system for his pharmaceutical poisons,
right.
His pharmaceutical interests, which produced pharmaceutical poisons. And so using the influence of his money and his lobbyists and his phony science, like the Flexner Report, he indeed delicensed the homeopaths and the osteopaths and the herbalists and the eclectics and the chiropractors, who were reputable healthcare professionals, leaving only the allopaths, who are not reputable healthcare professionals because they've been trained with lies. And now the same is happening in Australia, I'm hearing.
Yeah, exactly. And we were caught up precisely in this battle because the hyperbaric practitioner that I ended up assisting after he ran out of money and couldn't fund his legal battle, he actually was a registered chiropractor. So it was sort of caught up in the turf war between the AMA and the chiropractic in Australia, which has followed on from your famous Wilkes case, which can't wait to jump on a plane and talk to the team behind that. So in the end, it backfired on AHPRA because they didn't think he'd fight. And, of course, with my help, and we're both, you know, pretty seasoned warriors, we only got to 18 arch lever binders and 906 peer-reviewed scientific articles that were on his website. And in the end, they failed in their prohibition order, which is what they're really on about. But they did, in fact, deregister him as a chiropractor. And luckily it didn't impact him continuing his great work with mainly disabled people that are suffering from, you know, neurological problems, and who knows whether most of those problems have been as a result of vaccination. And it's another
indeed
issue. So upset they lost that big test case, and they even took the case off their website. It's no longer shown as a relevant test case, partly because I informed 20 health ministers that are driving our national regulatory health system as part of the Ministerial Council for Health, if you Google that. I informed them it was a rather odd judicial decision because, A, the tribunal was not headed by a judge. It was just a senior lawyer who'd done, mind you, 20 years of cases with the prosecuting QC. So they're very well known to each other. And would you believe that of the, I think there might have been 15 witnesses, six were doctors, only six were regarded as experts. Only those six were regarded as experts in hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Okay, four for us and two for the government. All six medical experts' evidence over 15 days was absolutely ignored in the closing submission of the prosecuting QC and totally in the judgment. So if you looked at the Chiropractic Board of Australia v. Hooper and you Google that, you will not see any of our argument as to how come no evidence from the experts can be used and you can be deregistered from the back of witnesses who said they were not experts in the field. And so that case in itself is a criminal conspiracy, and I've been waiting for the right opportunity to actually address whether that case itself on its own, regardless of the big picture we'll discuss, is the first criminal conspiracy I can get up. And it was significantly backed by our main lobby group that's driving everything in Australia called the Friends of Science in Medicine, that you may have heard, website if anyone wants to look at this bogus Big Pharma front, the website is called scienceinmedicine.org. And you'll see if you link in with me, and I've given you my LinkedIn address, eventually I'll have my website up, prompted by this interview, you'll see that I'm attacking individually these members of the Friends of Science in Medicine. There's 1,000-plus gurus in Australia that are basically running every major institution, doctor, research, medical, you name it. They've all put their names on this website foolishly and who they work for, so we know who they all are. You know, they're not hiding behind closed doors in Australia, so one by one they're being targeted and asked for opinions on issues where there's no science backing according to the peak bodies in relation to mainstream evidence, and they're not enjoying having to address their own weaknesses when they're treating patients. So the first example, the chairman of this Friends of Science in Medicine, Professor John Dwyer, he was so irate that I asked one of his members to comment on the rubella science. Let's get back to vaccination. And the first thing I did when I was brought into the vaccination debate back in January when the no pay, no jab started, I looked at the Cochrane Collaboration Review on the most controversial vaccine, which we know, well, there might be more than one. It's probably HPV might be now, but, I mean, let's say it's MMR with the Wakefield Vax, et cetera. I look at the MMR on the Cochrane Collaboration Review, it said, oh, we can't find any scientific studies evidencing the efficacy of rubella. Like, nothing. I thought, gee, that's a bit odd. So I put that up on a LinkedIn post asking one of the Friends of Science in Medicine, could you please comment on this deficiency? And that particular member didn't, of course, and the president jumped in, did a massive blog on the Friends of Science in Medicine website, telling everybody how good the science is about rubella, but he too forgot to mention the Cochrane Collaboration Review comment. So he cherry-picked on his own blog the peak evidence, just like our Australian immunisation handbook's done too. So everyone in our mainstream is cherry-picking their evidence, and I'd gone through this massive case in Australia with this hyperbaric practitioner where the only evidence the government produced was Cochrane Collaboration Review studies done on whether hyperbaric treatment is efficacious for various medical treatments. So I learned about Cochrane Collaboration Review in that case. And not many people know about it, and many of the people listening will not have heard of Cochrane Collaboration Review, I suspect. But that is a brilliant website to look at for independent information. Cochrane, Cochrane.org. I've got nothing to do with it, but it's an open source.
Counselor, are you saying that the Australian courts take the Cochrane collaboration reports and consider them best evidence of the opinion?
Yeah,
of professionals.
That's why I'm so excited. That's the value I'm bringing to this debate, because fantastic. I had no idea. Even some of my medical doctor friends had never heard of it either, even though they should have. The weapon I've got, and this is why the Ministers for Health pulled off this site from the ARPA website, they were paranoid that I'd opened up a Pandora's box, because The fact that the government solely used the Cochrane collaboration reviews as their evidence to show that our evidence wasn't good enough, right? It's a pecking order issue. You know, we show you Cochrane, it says is not enough to support using hyperbaric for A, B, C, D, E. Therefore, you're deregistered because you've been making these claims that you had sufficient science. You understand? So in addition, not only our government has used the Cochrane Collaboration Review, if you go to the front page of the Friends of Science in Medicine website, which is scienceinmedicine.org, I mentioned, they specifically use Cochrane Collaboration Review as the standard to which they're holding the natural medicine professions to as well. So I'm stuffing that whole Friends of Science attack on natural medicine right in their face, and that's why I chose Rubella first to run with, because I couldn't believe Cochrane said they couldn't find a single study. Now, that's before you look at the conclusion on safety. The safety conclusion you'll see in my next LinkedIn post that I've drafted. It'll be up on my site probably later today. And if Ken Harvey's looking at it, I'm going to ask Ken Harvey, the number two player in the Friends of Science in Medicine, what do you think of the safety conclusion of the Cochrane collaboration? Ken, you're the main antagonist against natural medicine in Australia. Have you got any views as to whether this information should be brought to patients in the Australian Immunisation Handbook? Now, he's not going to like that question, and no doubt he'll either not answer it or we'll see what he does.
Getting back to no jab, no pay, no jab, or whatever it is. Yeah. Is there a concept in Australian constitutional law that the government has their limits on what the government can dangle in front of people? In other words, the government has a benefit, it dangles, and it says, but you have to surrender this right. Is there a concept of what's called, in America anyway, unconstitutional conditions?
Yeah, look, I did do constitutional law. In fact, I was actually at university when we had our major constitutional crisis in 1975 when the Governor-General sacked the Labor Party Prime Minister Whitlam. That's probably the biggest event in 100 years. So I was pretty good at constitutional law. I haven't delved into it because I'm aware that the Australian Vaccination Network, run by some very battle-hardened souls. Hanging in there, and they're raising the money to do the High Court challenge on that constitutional issue.
Excellent. Okay.
I would have thought they will win, but I mean, from my viewpoint, it's a time issue. I mean, I just don't know how long it'll take, and you can imagine the stringing out that will be done,
right,
you know, in that
children,
case.
And the number of dead children that will be a result of that, which is why, we have to start, on one level, we have to start holding up these people, like your science and medicine people and like Dr. Offit, for what they are, child killers.
Yeah, that's right. Correct. Now, I think there's other actions, and this is where I'm focusing my attention. I mean, number one, I think there is a criminal conspiracy behind it, and I foreshadowed that in a recent podcast and on my LinkedIn post. Now, that criminal conspiracy action could be done relatively quickly. So that will throw a cat amongst the pigeons. The reason I say it, just excuse me for a minute. The reason I say that is because, and bear in mind, I've only been drilling down into this for probably, 2 or 3 months, but I'll just show you in Australia, we have the National Immunisation Handbook.
Okay.
Now, I accompanied a mother to our one of our leading hospitals, better not say the name, about 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, who was under a family court order which she's consented to with a gun at her head, having her child vaccinated, but she was very concerned about the safety risk. Anyway, when we asked some certain questions of the head nurse there, it happened to be the head immunisation nurse, so the senior person who was going to do the vaccination and being trained in immunisation science, you would think. We put to her our concern about this Cochrane collaboration review, and she had no idea about it. No idea, didn't even know what Cochrane was. So we were highlighting the key point, Dr. Remus you know, and both of you are putting about the need for informed consent. And this handbook is quite clear at page, I think it's page 25. You can get it on a website called immunised.health.gov.au, immunised.health.gov.au. It's very clear that valid consent's needed. So on the back of that incident...
But it's okay, to coerce that consent, apparently.
No, it's not. No, it will not hold up. And the AMA has been very clear. They're very clear. Our AMA has been very clear that if patients are not giving the valid consent, it's not appropriate for the practitioner to proceed. So there's still that still hasn't been impacted. Where it's been impacted is in the family court, where it's been overriding one parent's right and giving one parent the right to consent. So that's the real issue. Excuse me for a minute.
Okay, no problem.
I had a bit of a blood nose. I mean, I must be feeling the blood coming. When I woke up this morning, I just getting over a cold, I blew my nose when I first got out of bed and the blood started running. So I think that was symptomatic of where we're about to go.
The blood is starting to run in the streets, no doubt. Frankly, if the president of our foundation, Major General Bert Stubblebine, is right, and the tipping point has been reached, and we're going to actually see the very negative effects on population through the impact of things right. like vaccination, by causing both infertility and, of course, developmental diseases as well as death. Yeah. I think that in the very near future, the politicians who have been doing this will have a lot of explaining to do. You know, they're going to keep on trying to cover it up. You know, the Zika virus, for example, is being used to cover up vaccine injuries in Brazil.
Yeah.
And no doubt that's going to continue. But the world is waking up.
Or fertilize the damage in the water.
That too.
Oh, yes. This is a synergistic tragedy.
Yeah.
But
it could be.
Go ahead, Graham.
It could be even. I've been thinking about this. You have started action in the US against Monsanto on their claims. I mean, it could be that a conspiracy action could be mounted, including the chemical people. Just like you'd have a road accident, you've got contributory negligence. You're not sure, you know. Little bit was contributed by this driver and this driver and this driver. We could argue these neurological problems are partly caused by the chemicals in the food and partly by the vaccination. You know, we can't pin both. But if you get back to this case that I'm trying to immediately have an impact, we had an immediate complaint on the back of that consultation to our health regulator about that head nurse that she failed to provide in appropriate informed consent information to the mother to form a view that she, the mother, could give valid consent. So there's two issues. The case I was involved in was all about the professional failing to obtain informed consent. So the professional has to obtain the informed consent. The mother or the father has to provide valid consent. Right, and the handbook's quite specific about that, and it uses three particular concepts which I'm drilling into, and the three concepts are the valid consent can be defined as the voluntary agreement, and that gets back to the no pay, no jab. If it's been induced, or under duress or blackmail like the no pay, no jab, then it's not a voluntary agreement by an individual to a proposed procedure. Now, this is the punchline: given after sufficient, appropriate, and relevant information. So that's SAR, I'm trying to remember it, sufficient, appropriate, and reliable. So we did have the SARS virus, so here we have the rebirth. Well,
the language that you're using here is language that's almost been picked word for word from the Nuremberg Code. Which was, as you know, the great codification of informed consent. As I said, wars have consequences.
Well, this is we know we're in a war, and day one when I helped my hyperbaric practitioner, and I don't mind anybody knowing, page one of my PowerPoint to him on how we were going to do this in 2011, 25th of November. front page was Art of War. So we've taken 5 years to get to here, and we're still battling. But so the concept I was talking about before, there's a dual issue here. The practitioner, I'm putting the practitioner under notice that they're not providing the sufficient, appropriate, reliable information. And just like my practitioner, Hyperbaric, was deregistered on that issue, we've complained to the ARPRA body about that nurse. Now, that is going to put a cat amongst the pigeons, because none of the nurses are trained in science. They might have been trained on how to jab a needle and how to fill out the, you know, how to fill out the protocol forms, but they don't know the science. And this nurse proved in this consultation, we had no idea. So I think by that particular step, and this is the number one step, complaining about your professional medical person administering the treatment is the number one action step. They have professional duties. They must follow them, failing which you should report them. Now, that doesn't mean the regulator will do anything. I mean, they'll sit on this for a while, but it's an issue. And then it becomes a problem for this hospital, because the doctors are very cunning, right? The doctors have carved out an immunization protocol and process whereby predominantly nurses are doing the job. Nurses have to have little vaccinations themselves, while all the ivory tower doctors who give the evidence in courts or sit up in 20th level or whatever, bet you they haven't had all the vaccinations, right? Now, they're the ones that should be doing the jabbing and the informing. Now, if the nurses suddenly realise they do not have the expertise, the training, the knowledge to provide the SARS advice, sufficiency, appropriateness and reliability, then they will be withdrawn from the process, because every person could complain they're not providing the right information. Now, the second limb, and this is only something I came across 2 weeks ago, I was drilling down again on this handbook, right? And if we go to page 3, the thing that struck me, and I've spoken to a number of people that have done cases in Australia, and I don't know what the situation is in the US. If I go to page 3 of the handbook, on the background, which is the last paragraph, it says, as follows, it says, this is the 10th edition, right? It says, the first edition was published in 1975. So we're talking 40 years ago they did the first one, right? This is the 10th. It's a cop-out. They say, due to its longevity, scope and complexity, the handbook does differ from other guidelines provided by the government on medical clinical practice. Okay, so we're talking about vaccinating, you know, one-day-old babies. We're going to depart from our normal guidelines, right? And as such, the recommendations on all these vaccinations contained in the handbook do not contain formal levels or grades of evidence or evidence tables. And in fact, we apologise, in the 9th edition, we did put the 3 new vaccines in, and we did tell you the standard of evidence. I've got to tell you, only got a B. That was HPV, the herpes, roster 1, and also the rotavirus one. In the 10th edition, they've pulled out all those grades of evidence as well. So that led me then, okay, well, what are these guidelines the government's got? So we've got our major National Health and Medical Research Council, right? And if you go again in this handbook, I've counted 100-plus names acknowledged in the handbook, all part of this labyrinth and technical committees and working parties and advisory boards on immunisation. They have very specific guidelines they give to every single area of medical practice. I counted, I've got an Excel spreadsheet I can make available on your website, 55 separate mandatory guidelines you are required as a author of handbooks like this or any other area to abide by. Now, how come the government has opted out 55 mandatory guidelines so that these recommendations don't have to tell you that there is almost no proper scientific evidence either as to efficacy or effectiveness or safety in relation to any of them. I mean, they've opted it out. Now, I think that is a criminal conspiracy because they've just done a review last year on all the natural therapies, and guess what they used to discredit all 17 natural therapies to remove their health insurance rebates, which hasn't happened yet, but that's what the document was designed to do.
Yeah.
Did rule there was no scientific evidence to support any of the 17 professions based on these mandatory guidelines of scientific evidence. So on the one hand, they've stitched up completely the natural profession. On the other hand, they've opted out entirely the vaccination global network. You can just opt into our system and don't have to worry about any proper scientific advice. Extraordinary.
No, this is shocking and not at all surprising at the same time.
And indeed, Dr. Rima, before you go back, one point to our listeners. Just in the past few days, the FDA has issued a letter to a vitamin company in which it basically intimates that the word health may come under scrutiny. And yes, an FDA may take healthy, may say that natural remedies can't claim to be healthy. So it's exactly the same thing in the U.S. as in Australia.
I want to go back to the consultation that was so woefully inadequate, as the head immunology nurse failed to provide informed consent, SAR. If the mother, and you may have seen me fumbling with my purse, I was looking for something that is in my other purse, and that is the Advance Vaccine Directive card. Ralph, do you happen to have one that you can hold
up? I can get one to hold up, but there's also, of course, folks, on the screen, on our screen right now on the live stream, but I will find one.
If the mother or you had in her hand or your hand a card with the name of the child on it, signed by the mother and dated appropriately, and that card had said, as the Advanced Vaccine Directive card does, "I refuse all vaccines. I am exercising my right of informed consent, and you need to be informed, oh nurse, oh doctor, oh person with a syringe in your hand, that if you violate my refusal, you may be engaging in criminal behavior." In the United States, that criminal behavior includes assault, battery, and personal liability for malpractice, as opposed to the shield against liability for the vaccine administer or the vaccine company. So if the mother had, because Australia is a signatory of the Geneva Convention, because Australia's convention does say that people have the right for uncoerced decisions about their health. Had the mother had that card in her hand, or you holding it for her, what would have been the legal status of that claim, and what do you think would happen if millions of people were using those cards as their shield?
And before you answer that, consider also the case of someone who has a card that says, "I am a diabetic," or someone who has a card that says, "I'm allergic to penicillin."
I do not consent to organ transplant if I expire. Please, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, I think I was hinting before, it's a two-level process. We weren't saying we were categorically not consenting to vaccination, so we weren't at the stage where we wanted to show a card. We were. The mother had actually consented as part of a family court order there, but still subject to receiving the right information. So I think...
So you're saying it was the informed part that you were challenging, not the consent part, because this particular lady had already waived her consent, in effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm honing in. I think everybody's got the right not to consent. I don't think that's being challenged under the no pay, no jab. That's why they didn't go to mandatory route in California.
Well, if you don't consent, you lose the public benefits. Your children may not be able to go to school. As in California, their state constitution says children have a right to a so-called free public education. And now the Governor Jerry Brownshirt says you gotta surrender your right to informed consent before you get that free education.
And that's the same.
Isn't that coercion? Isn't that exactly what we hung the Nazi doctors for doing?
I agree with you. I actually think it's also blackmail. I've looked at the actual criminal act, and I've studied the blackmail definitions. I looked at a couple of cases. I think the no pay, no jab actually meets the definition of blackmail. And I've been told that you can do a private action for you don't have to wait for the government to implement an action against a crime. I think there is a blackmail issue. B, I agree with you that it effectively is a mandatory piece of legislation, but they're still maintaining the charade, the Liberal Party and the opposition party, that they haven't mandated in Australia, because you've still got the right to say no. It just means you're going to lose these social welfare benefits that you otherwise would have got. So they're not wanting to go the full extent in Australia that you've done in California at this point. Now, I think it won't stack up eventually, under the High Court challenge we talked about. But at this stage, if you don't consent, the AMA, Australian Medical Association, have been very clear advising practitioners that they are not to vaccinate the child. So that's still in play. Now, where you can take it on the other side, the problem for mothers is usually it's coming through where there's been splits in the family and you're ending up in the family court, and that's when they've been able to divide and conquer. And to my knowledge, no mother, or in a couple of cases a father, has succeeded in the family court to stop their child being vaccinated, right? Normally the family court has been overriding one parent's opposition, and therefore the other parent can go in and be and take the kid in for vaccination. So that's where we're effectively going now. The next stage is back to the family court, and this will be the first time, I'm hoping, and they'll do everything not to hear this, this evidence, but I'm hoping that a family court judge will examine the issue of valid consent before overriding one of the parents. And I think they're going to be alarmed to know that the guidelines have been drafted by exempting the government out of its own mandatory scientific guidelines, and that there is no guidance to mothers or fathers as to the level of science supporting any of these vaccinations. And to put to the judge that our legislature, unlike California, did not specifically mandate that you must have vaccination. So therefore, why should the family court always mandate, if there's a dispute, that the kid's got to get the vaccinations? It's not up to the family court to say it's in the best interest of the child must be vaccinated, because our legislature hasn't gone that far.
Let me share.
Very interesting.
Share a legal situation here in Chile. I live in Chile at the moment. Yes, and
can't wait. And the Olympics.
Pardon me.
Can't wait to get to Chile. I can remember doing about a formed grade 7 essay or topic on Chile.
It's a spectacular place for a lot of reasons. Not perfect, but spectacular. Yeah. So,
any comfrey grown in
Chile? I'm sorry?
Any comfrey grown in Chile?
Why not? You can grow pretty much everything in Chile. It's a strengthening of a country with every possible climate you could want, and several you might not want. But in Chile, a mother decided she did not want to vaccinate her child. And there are indeed mandates here. So, and there is a format for opting out of the mandates, but in this case, the mother was not able to do so. And the case went to the High Court. which for those of you who live in the United States is the equivalent of the Supreme Court. And although Chile is not a common law legal system country, it is a Napoleonic Code legal system country, and there are some serious and significant differences. Nonetheless, what I'm going to say, I think, is still quite informative in the common law system thinking. So the mother went through the legal system until she reached the high court, and the high court decided against her. They decided that her child, who was now 4 years old, did indeed have to be vaccinated. And so everybody here in Chile thinks that that case was lost and the battle's over, but not so. What happened was that the mother and her lawyer did not give up, and they said, okay, here's the child. You want to vaccinate her, but vaccines have dangers associated with them. That's in the literature. That's quite clear. The United States courts have held that vaccines are unavoidably unsafe. Therefore, since you are going to vaccinate my 4-year-old daughter over my strongest objections, I want you, O Minister of Health of Chile, to sign a document saying that you will be responsible for any damage that accrues to my child whatsoever that could possibly have come from vaccine injury, and that she will be protected and taken care of by the government or by you personally in the event that there is damage. So, yes, please go ahead and vaccinate my child after you sign the document, Your Excellency. To which the response was, I'll get back to you. And in the years ensuing, nobody's gotten back to the mom. The child has not yet been vaccinated.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
That's
consistent with the way the AMA is sort of going. I mean, one point that I suppose I did gloss over, the mandatory side, clearly what's happened with our childcare situation, I haven't had a chance to drill, you know, seriously the way I like to drill down into it, but where they're preventing children going to childcare in Australia is pretty outrageous. I think the only state that's given a conscientious objection to that is New South Wales, so that's a pretty critical state to protect that right. But yeah, that's going to be one of my next areas, is to, because it's putting the mothers just under extraordinary peer group problems as well, you know, with their social groups, and they're feeling ostracized. And you know, we've only got about 1.5% that are saying no anyway, so it's a small population, and it's got a lot of different ramifications, this, you know, quasi/mandatory approach they're taking.
Isn't it the Health Minister of New South Wales who said that there are absolutely no dangers whatsoever to vaccines? Don't I recall that?
No. Well, maybe they all are, but no, that was my beautiful minister, Jill.
I'm sorry.
All vaccines are safe, Hennessy, as I describe her in every blog I can get out there.
That's but, totally yeah, contrary no. to everything else. I mean, even the pro-vaccine people admit that there are adverse reactions. You know, they just believe they're one in a million, and we think they're one in one.
Yeah, well, the scary thing is that she's just appointed this bureaucrat to run the health department, who would hate me doing this, but she's responsible for most of the advice in relation to the new health complaints bill in this state. But Mike Adams so rightly commented in that brilliant video that I saw and watched many times about Jill Hennessy and her ignorance in relation to the vaccine safety issue. And it's just extraordinary the lengths to which she's gone to...
I'm sorry, we can't read that. I wonder if you could read the contents of that card.
Well, I came across... just after Mike Adams had put up that very damaging video about Jill's comments about vaccine safety, the same minister was in the final throes of getting Victoria to pass this health complaints bill, which is part of the criminal conspiracy to destroy all natural professions and the ability of any practitioner to meet the mandatory there is a mandatory code in that one, code of conduct, and that's been targeted by Jill. And, of course, she appointed, scaringly so, as I discovered, this woman in the bowels of Parliament House after the bill was passed at 10:31 night.
It's 9 o'clock.
In the upper house, I confronted civilly in the foyer of the Parliament House this woman and her six other female staff members, all working for the Department of Health and Human Services in Victoria, Minister Hennessy's department. Kathy, K-A-T-H-Y, Ettershank, E-T-T-E-R-S-H-A-N-K, and I've referred to her in one of my blogs and LinkedIn posts. And guess where Kathy, who provided all of the advice in the Parliament when the questions were being answered in the debate, Kathy, as a public servant, was giving the politician all the advice. Kathy spent 11 years recently in the Victorian Police Force. The Victorian Police Force. So that's her credentials now to be the guide.
Well, it is appropriate if you, if it's part of if this is part of a general policy of population control, it is a police matter on a certain level. The reality behind this is not protecting children from disease. The reality is controlling people, making people infertile, and reducing population. And Dr. Rima, we're 1 hour into the Dr. Rima Truth Reports. We're one half through today's extraordinary program. At this point in the program, we usually take a break for a minute or two. We tell people a little bit about our websites, and then we come back to our discussion with our guest. And by the way, we want to know what your website is, how people can contact you.
But there is another part of the reality. Ralph, you were just talking about the reality being depopulation and population control. There is another part of this that we've been talking about today with Graham Little, our guest, whom we are very honored to have, the attorney from Australia, who is not afraid to tell the truth and use the legal tools to bring it forward. That is an additional reality, which is to criminalize health, to criminalize the use of the word health, to criminalize health, to criminalize being healthy, to denormalize not having a chronic disease.
Right.
117 million Americans. Do the math. There are about 310 million. 117 million Americans live with a chronic disease. Almost 60% of adult Americans take five or more medications chronically. About 54% of all children in the United States are on at least one medication for a chronic disease. If you criminalize health, if you institutionalize illness, then you control every aspect of the population, quite literally, who lives and who dies. And oh, by the way, while correctly used prescription drugs are the leading cause of death in the United States, incorrectly used prescription drugs are the third leading cause of death in the United States. How many people are drugs killing? And that doesn't count vaccines. We are talking about the slaughter of the innocent, the not so innocent, the guilty. We're talking about the slaughter of everyone through a pharmaceutical holocaust. And it's profitable too. Now, having said that, let me talk to you about solutions for a moment, because Ralph said that I should. So I always listen to Ralph, except when I don't.
Hey, Solutions is our middle name, Natural Solutions Foundation.
Solutions is our middle name. And I also always listen to General Burt, except when I don't. This is true. So the point is, pharmaceutical drugs kill, they maim, they create more problems. Those are called side effects, but in reality, there are only side effects. And they are a formula and a recipe for social disaster, economic disaster, personal health disaster and absolute control by the globalist community of, I think you'd have to call them, inhuman monsters. So what is a person to do? Well, a person is to take their own health into their own hands. And that means, first and foremost, you need information. You need the open mind to seek the information. So I want you to go to a page called Dr. Rima Recommends. DR, Ralph, could you type that
on
the
chat? It's on there. Yep, it's on the screen. It's on the screen.
And also type it on the chat. Dr. Rima Recommends. That's a page that we created where I personally have vetted every single information source on there. And we have webinars and seminars, many of which are free, some of which are free at one point. And if you miss that opportunity, then you have to pay a small amount for them. And we have the health, those are about cancer and diabetes and Lyme disease and metabolic syndrome and infertility and Alzheimer's disease and autism. And we are adding new information that I, as a physician for almost 50 years practicing medicine and psychiatry without a single drug, have vetted. This is good information. It's real information. It's natural health care for you, whatever your particular health concerns might be. And then there are some products. There are two products which, if used properly, and you can't use them because they're both totally non-toxic. If used properly, replace, in my estimation as a physician, approximately 95% of drugs used on an outpatient basis by the populace. One of them is CBD, cannabidiol, the non-psychoactive part of the production of the hemp plant, made by your own body and essential to your own pain regulation, your own immune regulation, your own mood regulation, your own inflammation regulation, your own digestive regulation, etc. It's an essential adaptogenic molecule that you make yourself and that you have receptors for. You can use it as a supplement. CBD is a miracle molecule, which, by the way, helps refresh and rejuvenate mitochondria. It's pretty important. And the other one is NanoSilver. 10 parts per million. NanoSilver, 10 parts per million. We're not allowed to say it's an antibacterial or an antiviral or an antiparasitic. We're only allowed to say, we're not allowed to say those things. So we're not saying those things. But I will tell you that people who take that and receive the immune support therefrom don't have to worry about the things that you're supposed to worry about and get vaccinated against. So we're talking about getting rid of the mythology that you need drugs, getting rid of the mythology that you need vaccines, and taking your health into your own hands with information and with miraculous molecules, CBD, cannabidiol, and NanoSilver. Will it take care of everything? I almost said cure, but please, FDA listeners and Department of Homeland Security listeners and Human Services listeners and all you surveillance dogs, I didn't say cure. I said helps. So used properly, these are molecules that your body needs to regulate itself and return to or protect the state of health, which is your inalienable right. And which, because of the globalist depredations on your food and on your environment and on your water and on your body through drugs and vaccines, you may well have lost. NanoSilver and CBD, probably the most powerful combination of health factors besides information that I have ever encountered. So go to drremarecommends.com. And look around and avail yourself of the help and the support that's there. Or just go directly to where you can buy these things. That is NSF, as in Natural Solutions Foundation, NSFMarketplace.com. And for a very limited time only, when you buy a bottle of any of our CBD or NanoSilver products, for each bottle you buy, you will receive a free advanced vaccine directive card so that as many people as possible can carry this card, wave it around in the face of the nurse, the doctor, the paramedic, the pharmacist, the whomever, and say, don't you dare. I have a vaccine exemption, which I am legally entitled to by the laws of this country and the international laws to which it is bound.
Indeed. And well, before we got in 1914, I want to tell about a case from 1914. But I think before I do that, I'll just tantalize the folks out there a little bit. CBDs and NanoSilver, there are some other good things out there that we've been looking at. There may be a new product coming along soon that may bring these together. It may be a few more weeks. But I think we'll, you know, I don't know what Dr. Rima wants to tell you about that, but maybe we'll just leave a little hint there. Think of NanoSilver and CBD and Fucoidin and Anathasixin and some other things and whatever you would really want to have in the nutrient that you want to take every day. Anyway, just a thought. But back to the law.
We're not saying that we're producing that and that we are designing the label right now. We wouldn't tell you that. But if we were, you'd want to know about it very soon. So
You can go to our site now and you can get your CBDs and you can get your NanoSilver. They're there.
Yes, they're there. So you definitely want to sign up for our newsletter so that we can tell you about the new things that are happening and the actions that you need to take. Pushback is not just something that lawyers do. Pushback is something that we do. And then the lawyers take our inflamed sensibilities and beat the courts over the head with them. Would you say that's true, Graham?
Absolutely, yeah. I think I love your approach.
You
might need a little bit of oil in that new product too, by the way.
Ah, yes, it's a very important product. And Australia has just legalized medical marijuana, which CBD is not, but in the irrational minds of regulators, they link them together, so it may be much easier for people to get CBD than it has been in Australia.
It is to be hoped. Yeah. Now, you know, our law reaches back over 100 years when it comes to informed consent here in the United States. Famous decision in 1914, just a little over 100 years ago, where a well-known American judge, future Supreme Court Justice by the name of Cordoza, who was very well-known on the New York State Supreme High Court, held that a medical doctor, any medical professional, who engages in a medical intervention without the informed consent of the patient, commits an assault and battery, and is liable for damages in malpractice. And that's really the underlying, that case is the start of informed consent law in the United States. And it goes on through, of course, what happened in World War II, and it goes through some statutes that were adopted after World War II that literally track the language of the Nuremberg Code. And finally, as recently as 2013, in the case of Missouri versus McNeely, very important Supreme Court decision. It's a case that talks directly about the nature of informed consent. And it says that in that case, if he hadn't asserted, you must assert your refusal to give informed consent or it's deemed waived. You have to say it. And if you can't say it, you have to waive it. And that's exactly what happens with someone who someone might be brought into an emergency room after an auto accident. The first thing that they're going to do is, if the person is not conscious, they're going to check the person's pockets and wallet and pocketbook and find out if there are any medical directive cards there. And if there are, whatever the card says is going to go right on that chart for that person so that the medical people know what they're not supposed to do. Do no harm being, of course, the first rule. And so what we're telling people is that the Advanced Vaccine Directive Card is simply another example of asserting your right to informed consent. And the medical community, regardless of what various legislators do, are still going to be held liable in damages if they violate informed consent.
Now, imagine you're in a hospital or a clinic, and somebody says, well, you need to have all your vaccines brought up to date. You're about to have 31 vaccines, sir or madam. Or your child needs 14 vaccines, and you wave your card, and they say, well, what's that? I don't know what that is. And you say, would you please contact your facility's attorney, your counsel, please, because I think your attorney will understand better than you might that if you violate my informed consent or the informed consent that I have exercised as the guardian of this child and proceed with your planned vaccination violation, then what's going to happen is that you are personally liable. Your supervisor is personally liable. Your department director is personally liable. And the head of the hospital is personally liable for a criminal assault on my person or on my child's person. And you may want to check with the hospital attorney before you proceed.
And those laws that say that you doctors and nurses and all are exempt from damages for vaccine injuries, that's vaccine injuries. No, no, we're talking about assault and battery and malpractice here. We're not talking about a vaccine injury.
And possibly civil liberties deprivations,
right,
as well. Graham, what is your response to that, and what is your thought about the Australian application?
Well, I think it has direct application in Australia for sure. And as I've indicated as well, I think there's scope to target their professional registration as well. So rather than just having a look at the civil and criminal potential and compensation issues that flow, hit them where it hurts most, and that's a professional misconduct case where three immediate steps happen the minute there's a complaint. One, the doctor's got to tell his lawyer that I've just got a complaint, you know, to the health authorities. Number two, they've got to tell the indemnity insurers, are you all listening out there, that there's been a complaint lodged. And then third, obviously, there's a lot of other doctors they're going to talk to or nurses to say, bloody hell, I just got a complaint for my professional conduct in the way I'm handling vaccination cases. So I've got probably 10 personal integrative health practitioners to look after me. You know, and I'm trying to be an elite master's track cyclist at the age of 60. So, you know, I've got four that are being attacked right now by APRA. I mean, anyone is, you know, doing anything other than prescribing a cold tablet or influenza vaccine is being attacked for unorthodox behaviour. So it's a debilitating process for any health practitioner to be caught up in this disciplinary procedure. Now, there's an example of what happened, and I learnt about this in this chiropractic case that I was mentioning with the hyperbaric practitioner. Do you remember a science blogger by the name of Singh in the UK in 2010, and he did a blog on the chiropractic profession challenging their science, and of course the chiropractic board in the UK got a bit anxious and took him on for defamation, right? And it backfired, and then in the House of Lords they affirmed that the blogger was okay. And then he then sort of had a campaign, and there were about 2,500 complaints lodged about chiropractors to the UK regulatory authorities, which bogged them down so much that they had to employ fourfold increase in staff, and some chiropractors, including the chairman of the main association, got three separate complaints. And he came to Australia and lectured all the chiropractors about what a nightmare it is to have to go through the disciplinary procedure. So I think it definitely, they all know. There wouldn't be one nurse or one doctor that doesn't know what they're doing is partially ethically questionable, let's put it like that. They're all uncomfortable with their role telling patients in Victoria or Australia or whatever that the information about vaccinations is okay. I don't think they're really comfortable at all. So I think for them to be caught up in this scientific web and have to be able to justify the way they conduct their own consultations with patients is going to be a frightening experience when it becomes the norm. And now you've created a norm with the card. I think we should have another norm on what is the right level of evidence. Now, I'm calling it a supplementary handbook. So I am working on this right now, right, and I'm happy to work with anyone around the world that has studied the safety and efficacy issues at the highest level. We don't need information going to mothers and fathers that have excluded all the mandatory guidelines that talk about systematic reviews and all this. We need the proper information, and we need all the reference material going out to be analysed for what it is. I'll give you one example, right? The MMR vaccine, I drilled down into the handbook, and if you want to go to the Australian one, on the immunise.health.gov.au website, it's at page 296. Now, I looked at the issue of why our government didn't talk about the Cochrane review first, which it should have, as the only systematic review ever done on the MMR vaccine. Never been another one according to Cochrane, and that's a bit of a laugh. The first thing they say to Australian mothers and fathers, clinical trials of MMR vaccine indicate 95% mumps, zero conversion after a single dose, and up to 100% after a second dose, reference number 4. So I go to the back of the book, reference number 4, they don't have any references listed. So you have to go to the website. I then I go to the website, it gets better. They refer in the website to a different reference, and it's not hyperlinked. So you go, well, how do I find out this absolute critical piece of scientific evidence about MMR? It's a textbook. It's a textbook. So, okay, so how do I get the textbook? It's out of print. It's called Vaccines Edition 5. It's out of print. I ring the hotline, immunisation hotline, Australian government. They can't tell me what the scientific evidence is for the MMR vaccine efficacy. So what do? You ring the libraries. They don't have it. It's the fifth edition. Finally found it in the fifth library, the fifth edition. The current edition is the sixth edition, so we're not even referring to the current edition. Finally found the only fifth edition, went to the library to see what is the science behind the MMR vaccine that all these authors of our Australian handbook are pinning their hopes on and ignoring Cochrane. Well, guess what? It's a whole chapter, right? It's not a specific scientific trial. So then you go, okay, well, tell me out of this scientific chapter by I'll come to who the author of the vaccine textbook is in a minute, you'll love that. Tell me which of this chapter, it's comprised 30 pages of information, am I supposed to get comfort to get my kid MMR, right? Because I've heard about the vax move. Well, guess what? How many scientific references are at the back of just that single chapter only that I'm referred to? 457 separate scientific trials. Now, then I asked the government, and I've got a live inquiry going right now, which of the 457 are you relying on? Of course, they can't tell me. And they've said, oh, it's just the general. It's just the general.
But wait, it says 95% on the first shot and 100% by the second shot. That's not general. Yeah. That's very specific.
And not only that, there is currently a whistleblower federal suit because that was bogus science. But go ahead.
So then, you know, friends of science in medicine, come on down, Ken Harvey, you're next. Then you say, okay, well, what's legitimacy? You've doctored this handbook by leaving out all the normal guidelines to give people comfort on safety and everything. Who wrote this vaccines chapter that you won't tell me, which is the science trial behind it? It's not only, it's Mr. Plot or Dr. Plot. Kin, who's very well known, and of course he's been science director for the third largest drug company in the world, Sanofi Pasteur, and his little co-author, Doctor, I take 10,000 vaccines with no problem. Offit. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yes.
We're relying on mothers and fathers, a textbook, not a scientific trial, where we don't even know what the science trial it is that they're referring to, written by the science director for the drug industry. I mean, it's a farce. If that's not a criminal conspiracy, I don't know what is. Crazy. No, there is no science.
And so, exactly, there is no science. And I want to remind our listeners that the entire science, quote, of vaccinology is a fraud. It was born in pus, poison, and deceit, and it continues in pus, poison, and deceit. What do I mean by that? First of all, Edward Jenner did not create the concept of sticking a needle in pus from one person and sticking that needle into another person as immunization or vaccination. It was being practiced in Turkey, and the wife of a British nobleman saw it being done in Turkey, came home, talked about it, and Jenner took it from another physician who was experimenting with it. Jenner bought his medical degree for £25 sterling from the University of Edinburgh. I didn't know you could do that, or I would have saved myself a whole lot of time going to medical school. Edward Jenner would publish the results of his experiments before he conducted them. And frequently, the results were that people would have anaphylactic shock and die. His own son and his repeated experimental subject both died of anaphylactic shock from his treatment. And he would change the results, of course, and continue to publish glowing results. Now, when the British Parliament, and of course there is no such thing as cowpox, into which the needle was being dipped, into the pus of which the needle was being dipped, the cowpox was actually an open syphilitic sore on the hands of people who had syphilis. And so healthy babies were being inoculated when the British government started enforcing the mandatory vaccine laws. Healthy babies were dying of syphilis very quickly because that's what happens when you inoculate a baby with syphilitic pus. And the people became very upset, and the Parliament of England carried out a 2-year blue ribbon panel study, at the end of which they decided that the evidence was quite conclusive that they and their law mandating vaccination or putting parents in jail if they did not vaccinate their children was directly responsible for killing large numbers of British children. And they then had, after a 2-year study, a choice. They could tell the British people the truth and cancel the mandate, or they could behave like politicians. And of course, they chose the second. They swept it under the rug. They said, nothing to see here, move along. And they doubled the lifetime stipend of Edward Jenner from £10,000 sterling a year, which was an almost unimaginable fortune, to £20,000 sterling a year. Now, I will, as
a good 25-pound investment, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. I will tell you as a footnote that in the tropics, where syphilis, for one reason or another, is not likely to be found, they couldn't find enough syphilitic open stage 2 wounds. So they used instead for their inoculum material the pus in the open sores of lepers. That is vaccine science. And it continues downhill, but high-techer from there.
Right.
Wow. Scary.
Yes, very scary. So what's a mother, a father, an adult, a child care worker to do in Australia today, Graham?
Well, I think the key thing is to get informed. I think the putting the head in the sand is has been the traditional way most people have gone. It's a very contentious issue, I've discovered, having raised it with some close friends. I mean, you know, most people have got an incredibly close mind on this issue. So I think the ones that are actually prepared to open their mind have got to do two clear things. One is to challenge their own professional to get the right advice and pin them down in writing as to areas they're concerned in to be able to get a very clear picture. And bear in mind, a lot of these vaccinations, they're continuing. And the law is quite clear in Australia that you are required to give valid consent on every single occasion. So as we get more information, as we get more information out to the people and as more science is done, every single time a mother or father goes for the next vaccination, they're entitled to seek the SARS trio, which is sufficient. What was the A? and reliable, appropriate and reliable information. So that should be done in writing to the doctors. All the questions you want to know, hopefully I'll have a template of questions that people can think about whether they're relevant to them, and then they can ask that of their doctor. The second massive area, now this is totally, totally untouched area, as far as I can see from my initial inquiry. The requirement to advise any adverse events that your child has received after any medical treatment is very broad. That responsibility can be with the parent or the child or the doctor or, you know, a carer or whatever. So we know the doctors are not passing on the adverse event material to the authorities. So the parent should be putting every single symptom that's happening after each vaccination themselves, right, to direct in Australia to the Therapeutic Goods Administration, which is the same as FDA, and secondly to the doctor themselves. The doctor should actually be informed. And then the doctor should also be passing that on. So there's two ways to tackle
this. Is it malpractice or misconduct to not pass on the adverse event if you're a licensed healthcare professional?
Correct. So I'm going back with people. See, there's a lot of mothers that have capitulated, right, with the no pay, no jab, because they do need the money, and they're just paralyzed in this torn emotional nightmare of what have they done to their child, but I need the money and I've got this, you know, I've got to go to childcare because I've got a job, and, you know, it's a turmoil. At least those ones that have got their child vaccinated, they can do a role for the future generation of mothers and children by religiously noting all of the symptoms and reporting them direct to the authorities and their doctor. Now, that's something everybody can do, and they should do. It's a legal requirement to do, and we should be following them up. And so that would mean that there's a lot more on the table of what's happening within each of those regulatory bodies. The statistics will naturally go up, and the potential then for government action with those people inside government that are wanting to be whistleblowers, but it's too early. There's potential for people internally to take that increase in adverse events and study and put more resources into the post-market surveillance area, which is just so pathetically weak around the world, really. So I think they're two key steps.
Very good point. I know in the United States there's actually a form. In the United States there's actually a form that the FDA has online for reporting adverse events.
Right. We have a sign. We have a sign through the speaker. But most people think it's up to the doctor. And I studied it when I first, I think I was actually at that Mullumbimby community meeting where I first heard the dulcet tones of Dr. Reema. And that was a very presentation there. And that's when I sort of learned that most people didn't know they could make the adverse event themselves. They should be. They should be, because you know, it's just I think I nearly lost my eldest son, nearly lost him to asthma, and I'm tracing it back when I started looking at the whooping cough information in the vaccines textbook by Dr. Plotkin, I might add, $388 if you want to buy it. I spotted this thing on uncontrollable crying. And I thought, well, hang on, my son had uncontrollable crying. I never thought I was going to get a night's sleep. And then that morphed into really bad asthma. And then one night we had to take him to hospital and, he had his cortisone. And after about 4 hours, I said, we can't give him any more. You better take him home. He seems okay. Half an hour later, he's coughing his head off and I'm thinking he's going to die, And luckily I'd done a mind control course and I somehow got him to stop coughing using my mind, but we couldn't have given him any more doses. And I'm actually personally now thinking, well, was that vaccine damage that, that linked from that whooping cough? I mean,
one of the things that's happening, Graham, is that especially the people at the vaccine resistance movement on Facebook, which includes a lot of Australians, a lot of Americans, a lot of people from the UK, is they're looking at what happens when a kid begins to have a reaction to a vaccine, and they're putting photos up of the eye droop, of talking about information like the coughing fits. These things, I believe Dr. Rima will confirm, are almost typical symptoms of vaccine reactions. Right, Dr. Rima?
Dr. Andrew Molden, who may well have been murdered, he may have been one of the doctors who was silenced brutally, as it seems that the GCMAF doctors are being brutally silenced. Dr. Andrew Molden was a Canadian MD, PhD neurophysiologist who showed that every vaccine of whatever type injected into a human body causes microstrokes. It causes tiny, tiny vessels in the brain and perhaps in other organs as well, but certainly in the brain, to become occluded or blocked. Once they're blocked, the tissue that depends on that tube allowing oxygen into the tube, into the tissue and taking waste products away, the tissue that is dependent on that supply of oxygen and of detoxification dies. And when that tissue dies, it's called a microstroke. If a lot of tissue dies, it's called a stroke. But if it's just a tiny amount, it's called a microstroke. And he was able to show that every single vaccine that is put into a body will cause things that you can actually see, facial droops, changes in the way the eyes focus, in the way the lids are shaped, in the corner of the mouth, et cetera. If you know what to look for before the vaccine, you will not see this. And after the vaccine, you will see it, usually on a permanent basis. Now, if parents are trained or alerted to look at photographs of their children before the vaccine and after the vaccine, and then they are mobilized to report those damages, there will be a flood of adverse event reactions, which not even an organization as corrupt as the CDC, which, by the way, lost its vaccine adverse event reaction data recently, not even an organization that corrupt will be able to hide from it. So there's a public education campaign to be done for people who are about to become parents, people who are parents, people who are vaccinating their children. Just check it out. Look at a photograph of your child, frontal profile, other profile, and then after the vaccine, take the same pictures, take new photographs, frontal profile, other profile, and compare them. See what you see. What you will see is that your child has been irrevocably damaged by something that doesn't prevent disease. Because you could say, well, if it prevented disease, okay, so it'll prevent measles, a benign, self-limited disease. Well, it was worth getting rid of a little nervous system tissue. Okay, this will prevent hepatitis B, a sexually transmitted disease. My newborn needed that because they tend to sneak out. Newborns tend to sneak out at night.
And have unprotected sex, right?
yeah. and have sex for money. Yeah, they're known for that, sneaky yeah. little things. But if parents understand this and they look, they will see it, and the adverse events are absolutely cataclysmic and obvious. What do you think about that, Graham?
Yeah, I think they're extremely important insights for what parents could do. I mean, I'm a little curious. A couple of other areas that have come up in the last month. One's the apnea issue, where that was a side effect of one of the vaccines, and I know a lot about sleep apnea because my dentist diagnosed it in me about 10 years ago. I mean, probably had it all my life. So that made me wonder about the whole cot death and the shaking baby syndrome, which I'm about to get
yes. involved. Oh, you need to look at our webinar. We'll send you a copy of our webinar on shaken baby syndrome and vaccine injury.
We brought together some of the world's true experts on vaccine injury and shaken baby, and it's real clear, as Dr. Rima explains, the type of injuries that would have to be observable for a true shaken baby don't occur on these babies.
Yeah.
And it's really an adverse reaction. It's fulminant scurvy. It's a literally an adverse reaction that causes these apparent injuries.
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, I'm well aware of what adults can do to test their sleep apnea, you know, performance overnight. Mm-hmm. Whether we could start doing that in trials with babies pre and post vaccination to see has there been a change in their sleep pattern, which will show up very clearly, you know, in an ECG or whatever way they do it. The other area, and this is knowledge I've gained from the hyperbaric oxygen therapist, bearing in mind he's dealing predominantly in neurological disease, cerebral palsy, MS, you know, stroke, you name it.
Vaccine reactions.
What he's routinely doing now in the last probably 18 months is doing cytokine testing, which is not very well understood. So he's doing pre and post cytokine testing. So that's the pro-inflammatory cytokines and the anti-inflammatory cytokines. And that's showing up marked differences as to, the ones that are recovering well are having those inflammatory issues addressed. I'm sure the vaccination would come up dramatically on a cytokine test.
Absolutely.
And then we actually show positively there is a massive change in the inflammation happening pre and post. I mean, it can't be debated then. You know, it's a direct causal link from the day before to the day after or 5 days or whenever you think it's appropriate time to take it. Now, they're not cheap, but with the right crowdfunding or the right billionaire that wants to actually address corruption in big pharma, is there anyone out there? And can I put a plug in? I've just been told my website's now up for the first time.
Tell us. We'll type it up here too.
Absolutely.
What is it? Yes, tell us about it.
From what
you mean. All right.
www.fightpharmacorruption.com. Fight, PHARMA, pharmacorruption.com. I just got it up. Sorry, it was not before I started.
And I have put that on the chat.
And I'm putting it here on the live stream, if I can. There it is. All right.
But then I'll put up all my LinkedIn posts that I've done. I'll categorize them under different areas, whether it's the vaccination or the health complaints agenda to wipe out our natural practitioners or any of the other things. 9/11, I've been pretty irate about, because, you know, if you can accept that 9/11 is a corruption, which, you know, we probably all agree it's 100% a corruption, anything's possible after that. I mean, that's just mind-boggling. But, you know, the number of people still don't know about Tower 7 going down, including the recent post I did, Donald, Rumsfeld, your former defence man, didn't even know his own building had come down. So that's a bit of a worry.
Well, yes, maybe he had taken too much Tamiflu, which has adverse neurological reactions.
I think we're all going to have dementia, aren't they, the Nuremberg trials of 9/11.
So.
I think there'll be a lot of dementia setting in.
I think so. By the way, one of my favorite legal factoids is that when the United States alone, not with the participation of the other allies, but when it alone conducted the so-called subsequent Nuremberg tribunal in which the Nazi doctors were convicted of removing the not honoring the informed consent right of the people that they
experimented on, right?
And where they were, they were therefore executed. They were hanged. At that point, under international law, again the Nuremberg Conventions, the United States suddenly had new law, because under the Nuremberg Convention, the law that is applied to the vanquished cannot be different from the law that is applied to the citizens of the victor state. And therefore, denying informed consent became a capital offense in the United States. Now, I'm not a big proponent of capital punishment, but it seems to me I can make exceptions. And it seems to me that that legal precedent really needs to be pursued in a case against those, take Dr. Offit, who are lying and deceiving and for their own personal gain and other self-interested reasons, actually deceiving the public and leading to experimentation, since no U.S. vaccine has ever been found under the legal requirements to be either safe or effective, although it has to be found to be both. And therefore, every vaccine is both experimental and illegal, despite the apparent approval of the illegitimate agencies which are giving that approval, the FDA, the CDC, HHS, and so on. So it seems to me that we have some capital cases to try. Now, I'm not a lawyer, and I know it's just too much fun, but I love thinking about it.
Well, you know, the Nuremberg Code was intended as a restatement of the existing law that applied. And as such, it is a proper restatement of the law, and one that the courts can take a judicial notice of. And, you know, it's very clear what was going on in Nuremberg. Now, you take someone like Dr. Offit the Prophet. He sits on a CDC committee that approves vaccines, and he votes to approve a vaccine that he has a financial interest in, because everybody on that committee has a conflict. Instead of saying that people on the committee with a conflict must recuse themselves and not vote, they say, oh, as long as you reveal the conflict, you can still vote in favor of your own pocket. Yeah. In the case of one vaccine that Dr. Offit voted for, it was worth, was it $80 million in his pocket?
These I think it was
big
40,
numbers.
It was $42 million the first year to him, and a similar amount to his hospital.
I promise you, our holistic doctors like Dr. Rima are not in that category. But consider the company that had the torture contract with the United States, run by psychologists, not psychiatrists, also was an $80 million contract. So apparently, instead of 30 pieces of silver, it's $80 million, which is paid to those who are willing to prostitute themselves to the point of being deserving the approbation of all future generations.
I think you know, the problem that we're all identifying and grappling in every country, probably there's people, you know, that are facing the same issues, is, you know, who's really out there that wants to get behind this? You know, can we find, you know, the next Bill Gates or Warren Buffett? You know, is there any of the billionaires that are putting all their money into social welfare? One of them only, is one prepared to come and be the backer and get proper science? Like, is there anyone there? I want to try and find someone, and then we can do a lot of these cases. These money, you're going to do these cases, you need a deep pocket, and no one in this area that I'm seeing, no one in natural medicine seems to have any money. And you know, where does the money come from to run it? And all the parents haven't got any money.
I must say, Gates and Soros and the others are not putting their money into social welfare, Graham. They're putting their money into depopulation strategies. And in India, the Gates Foundation has been found by the High Court to be committing genocide. A friend of mine, Dr. Monipa Hegde, urged the Health Department of India and helped them bring that case. And the Gates Foundation and Gavi and WHO were found guilty of genocide because of their use of HPV on poor, malnourished girls whose reproductive lives ended at that point. And Gates and Gavi and WHO continue their vaccination program. So it's more than just the cases. There's a case that you would think would stop the program. It did not. As in India, Monsanto said three times to the high court, you just found against us. You found that we can't use our GMO seed. Well, take that. So it requires just a little more. But in some countries like Australia, like the United States, it would be a very, very big step forward. And I believe, unlike what you've just said, that we can self-fund this. I believe that we, the millions, can self-fund it.
Yeah.
Crowdfunding,
well,
that sort of thing.
I just put the hand up, you know.
What?
I just hope there's one billionaire that might just put their hand up.
If there's a billionaire who wants to, yes, let's do it.
By the way, whoever out there is in that category wants to contact us, please do. We have some very interesting plans that we could implement if we had the resources. Plans that could counter the depopulation agenda that General Burt has shown conclusively has actually literally reached the tipping point, and where it's now downhill, our species is on its way towards extinction, not just from Fukushima, and not just from geoengineering, and not just from GMOs, but from the vaccines most directly injected into children, resulting in that new level of infertility. What was it, Dr. Rima? Not more than 1 in 7 or 8 American women can conceive without medical intervention.
There's been a lot of crowing about the fact that American teenage pregnancies are down, way, way, way down, and have been declining. And that's a good thing. Children should not have children.
Yes.
I'm good with that. But why are they declining? I believe it's because of the vaccine and glyphosate and GMO-induced and the microwave-induced infertility that is literally helping to extinguish the reproductive capacity of the human species. And, oh, by the way, the advanced thinkers are saying, well, you should have an infertility pellet implanted when you reach reproductive age. And it won't be removable unless the government says that you are permitted to have X number of children.
This is, of course, the brave new world desires of the elite. And the elite, you know, pity folks, pity the poor genocidalists. They've been trying to kill off the population for at least 100 years, starting maybe with the first flu pandemic, which did kill 50 million people or more. And yet the Earth's population keeps on going up. Well, if General Byrd is right, even though it's going up now, because of the infertility and the other aspects, we are going to watch that decline. And what will the political effect be when it becomes obvious? Well, you know, in the Soviet Union, when Russian males started dying off younger and younger, even after Stalin was dead, even after the gulags were basically closed down, the Soviet Union collapsed, literally. That's what's happening in the United States right now. You need to go to drrematruthreports.com, go to the blog, and look at General Burt's most recent updating of his The Great Culling Has Begun essay. There's more information. We said last year that white men in America are dying younger and younger. They're losing the longevity race. Well, now it appears that women in the same category, what used to be the healthiest part of our population, are now experiencing a tremendous increase in longevity.
There is a new video that we put out very recently called Who Wants You Dead? Go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com, and look for...
YouTube.com/Natural Solutions Foundation.
Okay. Sorry. Sorry. Okay. YouTube.com/Natural Solutions Foundation. Go there and watch the short video, about 8 minutes, called Who Wants You Dead? And then share it with folks. One of the ways they want you dead is through destroyed immunity. It's so profitable. It's such a profitable way for you to die.
We have, folks, about 6 minutes left in the program. Our guest, Graham Little, is an attorney in Australia, and he is leading some of the efforts being made to counter Australian government's latest attempts at initiating crimes against humanity. We would love to give you the floor for the next few minutes to sum up what you've told us. Remind people about fightpharmacorruption.com. It's up there on the live stream. People, you need to go to that new website and pay attention to it. Graham.
Well, I really appreciate the chance to have this forum. It's quite extraordinary and very exciting for me to be talking to two internationally recognised gurus in this area. And I've got five key points I was going to make when I was thinking about where Australia's at. I mean, and we've touched on some of these. The first is that there actually is a civil or criminal conspiracy operating in Australia by Big Pharma, allianced with the mainstream medicine industry, and with the target to categorically destroy all natural medicine professions and their ability of patients to be treated. That's point one. The second issue is the incredible cherry-picking agenda that's going on, focused on this mythical concept of evidence-based science, where the mainstream medical people are saying the natural people don't have the evidence-based science, yet they're ignoring the fact they don't have either in just countless areas of normal medical mainstream. So the cherry-picking agenda has got to go. It's got to be a level playing field across both Big Pharma and natural. The third key problem we have in Australia, and I don't know how well organised you are in the US, there's 43 separate natural medicine professions registered under our FDA equivalent, the TGA. I'll be writing to all of them after this presentation. Why can't they unite and work together? They just can't see the wood from the trees at the moment. They're all individual associations battling for funds and money. They need to get together and unite. Fourthly, there's been a total failure of our political system, which is just incredibly corrupt, as we know. Our election is being fought on the back of a double dissolution because the Liberal Party is concerned about corruption in the building unions, and then our Labor Party, the equivalent of your Democrats, is saying there needs to be a Royal Commission into corruption in the financial sector that funds the Liberal Party, the equivalent of your Republic. And then luckily, though, the great white hope is a new Health Australia Party's just started, healthaustraliaparty.com.au. I joined as a $20 member recently, and I'm acquainted with some of the key people. They're going to try and get into the Senate, our upper house, in the next federal election due in 8 weeks' time, and they have a level playing field agenda between Big Pharma and chemical health on the one hand and the natural professions on the other. So they're trying to get the debate and address corruption, and hopefully they'll get their message through to the public. And then finally, in Australia, we have a totally opposite situation to your Whistleblower Act with the False Claims Act and the financial incentives to whistleblowers. I have spoken to a number of your, or been in contact through LinkedIn with a number of your whistleblowers that have successfully taken on Merck, with Brandy Vaughan and the Paxel people that took on Glaxo, and the Risperdal one. I've done a fair bit of work on Risperdal here to get it banned for dementia in Australia. So I think there's a real issue in Australia that we need your legislation, number one, to give financial incentives to whistleblowers, and secondly, we need to unite all of those hardworking ex-employees or of Big Pharma that have sat through those 10-year cases with the US Department of Justice, which I've poured through their website. We need them in a very tight, united group. Many of them have got some money as well, and they've still got the burn. That is the anchor to form a global litigation company to address globally all these issues. and follow through on the wins you've had in the US and take those to other countries, whether they're G20 countries or whether they're developing countries where the drug companies are just running roughshod and still selling their stuff that they've been banned in other countries. If we had like a global litigation backed by the whistleblower people themselves, some of your top attorneys that have busted their gut in some of those mega cases, I'm happy to link in with them here and pull some big guns out of the mainstream legal firms here that are a bit, you know, hamstrung with what they can say, and let's have a serious global attack on the damage that's being done with this depopulation strategy. I think we can win now. There's enough evidence now that it's come out everywhere that we can win. And maybe we should look at a global conspiracy case on the back of the Wilkes case. Maybe time, you know, they're operating globally, the enemy, you know. Let's look at a global conspiracy, a legal global conspiracy.
It's 10 o'clock.
We are in complete agreement with you. We have one last minute, Dr. Rima. Bring us out. We want to work with you on this project. We have people in India and around the world who are ready to join us on this.
We are so excited to have made your acquaintance. I hope to become functional friends and perhaps more good times together, taking down the globalists and the depopulationists and pharmacy corruption. You are a joy, Graham Little. It's been our pleasure. You've been listening to the Dr. Rima Truth Reports. Ralph Fusitola, my co-host, and I have been enthralled by this, as I said at the beginning, firebrand attorney. We need more firebrand attorneys, and we need firebrand clients.
All right, folks.
And a billionaire out there, a billionaire backer.
At least. All right, folks, we'll be back next week. Thank you.